This is Dr. Dave, and I'm proud to present to you Slice Your Age, episode 49.
Welcome to Slice Your Age, the show where we help you live stronger, thinner, healthier, and happier. Now, here's your host and personal coach, Dr. David Matto.
Okay, so I've got a favor to ask of you right now. Wherever you are, wherever you may be listening to the show, I want you to take a selfie of yourself. Go ahead, take a selfie with your phone, your device, whatever you may have. Take a selfie and go ahead and send it over to me. You can do it through Facebook, or you can send me the email if you want. And of course, it's sliceyourage@gmail.com. I want to see what you are doing right at this moment, whether you're at the gym, whether you're taking a walk, a run, mowing a lawn, wherever I want to see what you're doing this second. So take that selfie and send it to me right now. Thank you so much. Before we get started again, it's Dr. Dave here. Got a great show for you today. I just want to remind you that the way to be in touch and stay in touch with us is to go to sliceyourage.com. You can do everything there. Listen to the shows. You can subscribe through iTunes. You can send me an email. You can read my blog. Anything you want, you do it right through sliceyourage.com. So I've got a very special guest with me right now. Her name is Sharon McCrae. And let me go ahead and bring her in right now. You're going to love her. So, okay, as promised, I've got Sharon with me right here, and Sharon is a certified health coach. She's an instructor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and with that organization, she actually teaches the Food for Life classes, which is pretty cool. Sharon is a wife, a mother of three. She's got two 15-year-old twin daughters and an 11-year-old son. So, Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Dave.
Anytime, Sharon. It sounds like from your little intro there, you're quite a busy woman. Am I accurate with that?
I would say that's a fair assessment. Yes, pretty busy.
Okay, so how's your day going so far?
My day's going well, actually. Very rewarding day. I had two phone clients today who are both doing very, very well. And then just getting ready for right before this, I had to throw together a very quick dinner. And it's cooking as we're speaking.
So we'll talk about that in one second. I want to hear a little bit more about your dinner that's cooking as we're speaking. But when you speak to you've got coaching clients, I guess you probably have many. Like when you speak to your coaching clients on the phone, what do you do with them?
What I'm helping them do is I'm helping support them as they transition to a whole food plant-based diet and also adapt other healthy lifestyle habits such as exercise, meditation, yoga, just the types of things that help you, the types of things that you talk about, Dr. Dave. So I work with them in terms of establishing what their specific goals are and then helping them make small modifications each time I talk to them to move toward those goals, and I hold them accountable.
Okay, and you're totally plant-based whole foods, right? You wouldn't touch anything from an animal.
Oh my goodness, no. I haven't eaten anything from an animal in about 6 years. Prior to that, for about 2 decades, I was vegetarian, so I didn't eat any meat, but I did eat eggs and dairy. And after sort of a long story, but I can tell you how I came to that position if you'd like to hear.
I'd actually love to hear about it. Well, first of all, do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I am 52.
Okay, so you're 52 now, and you've been vegan for 6 years. So up until age 46, even though you were vegetarian for quite some time, you were as a vegetarian, you were eating mainly no meat at all, but just dairy and eggs.
Exactly.
So let's talk about, first of all, what made you go vegetarian, and what age were you when you went vegetarian?
I was in my late teens when I went vegetarian, and I would have to say it was more out of squeamishness that I was sort of looking at the meat on my plate, and in particular, the red meat. Actually, I have to take that back. I didn't go vegetarian in my late teens. For me, it was a very gradual transition. So in my late teens is when I gave up red meat, and it happened one night. My sister and I were sitting in front of the TV eating dinner on TV trays, terrible habit. And there was a news story about cattle, and we were eating one of my mother's favorite dishes to prepare, which was roast potatoes and carrots. And I had already been thinking about this, but my sister said, as the cattle walked across the screen, look, we're eating that. And I remember putting my fork down and saying, I'm never doing this again. And so from that point on, I never ate red meat. And then when I was in my 20s, I decided to become a biology major. So I started doing, unfortunately, dissections in school. And I couldn't help but dissect, when I would come home, the dinner that was on my plate. So if I had turkey or chicken or whatever it was, poultry really started to bother me. And so I gave up poultry at that time. And that was about the same time that my mom, who was in her early 40s, was diagnosed for the first time with breast cancer. It came as a huge shock for us, but she found the lump herself in the shower, and we were told it was very unlikely to be anything. And of course, she went in for a biopsy, and we got the bad news. So at that time, I started to think I needed to really clean up my act, and I started shopping at the organic market, and I read that there was a connection between exercise and prevention of breast cancer, so I started exercising regularly in my 20s. So I just started to clean up my diet, but not 100%. So I was still eating fish and dairy at that point. Then in my 30s, I got pregnant with my twins, and I was concerned about mercury. So I gave up fish and seafood in my 30s. And then in my 40s, and meanwhile, all these years, my mom was suffering back and forth with, you know, she'd have a period where she was well. Initially, she had just a biopsy and radiation, or, you know, the lumpectomy and radiation. And then the cancer came back on the same breast. So they did the mastectomy and chemotherapy. And then she'd be okay for a couple of years, and then it would keep coming back. It was always in the same area of her chest that it would come back. So I'm watching this, you know, and the treatment was getting progressively more intense, and side effects as well. And so I was pretty much living in fear and really trying to do everything I could. And at this time, I was working in a laboratory. I was a scientist in a lab. So I was working with all kinds of carcinogens and mutagens and all kinds of chemicals that who knows what they do to you. So it really was a scary time in my life. And in any case, to backtrack again, I was in my 30s, gave up the fish. In my 40s, in my mid to late 40s, my mom went into her end stages of disease where her cancer had metastasized to her pelvic region. And I was spending these long days, I hope you've never done this, but long days in the cancer ward at Hopkins. Have you ever gone through that?
You know, not really. I mean, thank God, I haven't had that any of that in my family, but we did have a close friend that many years ago did have lung cancer from smoking, and we spent a lot of time with her in the cancer ward. And I remember in hospice, and it was just, it was really, really sad and very difficult. So that's kind of my limited experience, Sharon.
Yeah, it's a horrible place to be. And I have to say, my mom was not the only cancer patient in my family. My two grandmothers had died in their early 60s of different forms of cancer. My father's brother died of cancer. My father's aunt died of cancer. My father, years later, after my mother's initial diagnosis, he got kidney cancer, and he's still with us, thankfully. But in any case, I was spending these long days in the hospital and in the cancer ward, which is just a horrible place to be. And I remember very clearly one day I was standing in the pantry, which is the area of the ward where they have the food for the patients. And I just heard this voice in my head, Dr. Dave, and I don't know how to explain it other than to say that it was a strange experience, but the voice said, stop eating animal products. Now, I had not read anything at this point that specifically linked animal products to disease. I didn't know anything. All I remember thinking is, wow, that means I'd have to be vegan. That's really scary. And that means, what would I eat? Because at the time, I loved feta cheese. I would have my Greek salads with tons of feta cheese. I loved pizza with tons of mozzarella. I loved my egg white omelets. But I thought, you know what? I'm just going to try it for 2 weeks. I'm not coming out. I'm not telling anybody I'm vegan. I'm just going to try it for 2 weeks and see how I do. So for the next 2 weeks, I pretty much just cut out all that stuff. And every time my husband would say, hey, do you want pizza? Do you want an omelet? Do you want a Greek salad? Whatever it was, I would say, I really don't feel like eating that. Nope, I don't feel like it. And I just kind of ate around whatever they ate. And after 2 weeks was up, I realized I felt better. I didn't miss it. And I just needed to live that way. And so I came out as vegan. And My husband flipped out because he was already eating vegetarian with us in the house. And my kids were raised vegetarian, so they were eating a lot of dairy. And everybody said, well, now what do we do? And I said, you know, I promise you, I'm not changing anyone else's diet. I just need to do this for myself. And so it went on that way. I lost my mom. And then I decided to, at the time I was working as a makeup artist. It was a crazy diversion after I gave up my science career when I had the kids. It was just fun and frivolous and connecting with people. But I decided I wasn't being fulfilled in some way. And so this health coaching training came up and I decided to pursue it. And when I did, someone mentioned the book to me, The China Study by T. Colin Campbell. Have you read that book?
I did not read the book, but I saw the movie, of course, Forks Over Knives, which explains a lot of the study, but I have not read the book.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal movie. It's a great piece for anyone to see, really. It's very informative, and I know it saved a lot of lives. But in any case, I read the book, and right there in the book is the whole chapter on casein, which is the predominant protein in dairy products. And it talks about how casein is a very strong promoter of cancer. And I read that, and as you can imagine, having these three young kids who were raised on dairy, I flipped out. I sat them all down, and I said, that's it. No more dairy. At the time, they were 6 and 10, and they all got hysterical, crying, carrying on. And I said to them, I promise you, I will make this easy for you. I promise. And I did my research. I found this great cheese substitute called Daya or Daya. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but it's D-A-I-Y-A. It looks like cheese. It melts like cheese, smells like cheese. And I bought that and I started using that to make all their favorite dishes, their grilled cheese and pizza and all that sort of stuff. And I started using almond milk instead of dairy milk and, you know, just creating different things for them. And around this time, I met a dear friend of mine, Chef AJ, who is a very popular vegan chef. I met her at a vegetarian summer fest in Pennsylvania and bought her book called Unprocessed. And her book had all these great recipes in it, great sweet recipes and savory recipes. And I started making them and my kids loved everything. And so that made it very easy. And so from that point on, that's pretty much, and we've refined the way that we eat. So now we don't even eat the Daya cheese anymore. We pretty much eat all whole foods. That came after I read the book Eat to Live by Dr. Joel Fuhrman, another great resource.
Now, what about your husband? Is he vegan?
He is. And he was the last to come along on the ride because he held on to his salmon for a really long time, thinking that was super healthy. But then the movie Forks Over Knives came out and we went to the premiere in D.C., and after the movie was over, he turned to me and said, I'm done. And so that was, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago that movie came out. But he's been completely vegan since then. And actually, since that time when he went completely vegan, his mom has had colon cancer. She's okay now. And his brother, who's not that much older, had prostate cancer. And thankfully, they're both okay. But to my knowledge, haven't changed their eating habits completely.
Sharon, so one of the first things you said when you went vegan, when you were kind of like the closet vegan for the first couple weeks before you really told anybody, you mentioned that right away you started feeling much better. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? When you say you in just a short amount of time you felt better, what does that mean?
For me, it was pretty much mostly initially psychologically better. I always had an underlying discomfort, for lack of a better word, knowing that I was eating something that was once a living being, you know, a sentiently living being. I used to suppress it, but I always felt a little queasy about it. And I would just not let my mind go to that place. And so once I stopped eating it, I didn't have to have that feeling when I was eating. I just didn't have to think about it. And the other thing that ended up happening for me, which I did not anticipate at all, had no idea was going to happen, but I had chronic sinus infections. I would get, anytime my kids had a cold, they were like little germ magnets. They would bring a cold into the house. I would get the cold and the cold wouldn't go away. It would turn into this raging sinus infection with extreme facial pain. I'd go on antibiotics. I'd be in bed for a few days. It was horrible. And I would have that about 3 or 4 times a year. And I went to about 4 different ear, nose, and throat specialists who all told me I had horrible allergies and I needed allergy shots. So I started getting the allergy shots, one in each arm every week. And nothing was helping, and it was just a horrible thing. Well, as soon as I gave up dairy, you know, as the months passed, I realized I wasn't getting colds, And one time I did get this little cold that lasted maybe 3 or 4 days and then went away. And when I had a cold that went away, I knew something was different. And so it turns out that dairy is actually linked to sinus problems. And since I've eliminated dairy, I haven't had a single sinus infection and maybe 2 colds. And again, both of them extremely mild. So that was another way in which I felt better.
And, you know, I've heard so many stories like that when people eliminate dairy, all these like allergic symptoms and sinus problems and things like that, they just mysteriously go away. Isn't it strange that the docs, or at least I should say most docs, don't know this stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was mentioning I went to 4 different doctors. Not a single one of them mentioned diet, and all 4 of them told me I needed surgery. What I've come to find out, having now worked with several physicians, is that doctors actually don't receive any, and if they do, it's very minimal, training on nutrition when they're in medical school. It's a sad reality that you can take your pet to the veterinarian and the vet can tell you what to feed your animal, but when you take your child to the doctor or when you go to the doctor, they can't tell you what to eat or feed your child.
It's really interesting because just a few minutes ago, I think you saw it, I posted something on Facebook that I was ready to go on the air, and I asked if anybody had any questions about being vegan or vegetarian or anything like that. And I've got a very interesting question it fits in totally perfectly to what we're talking about right now. So I'm going to read it and I'd like you to respond to this. It's actually from listener Kenneth Allen Morris. And what Kenneth says is, I've always thought it strange that humans drink cow's milk. Is there scientific evidence of benefits of drinking cow's milk? I always hear the calcium benefits, but is it true? What a timely question that is, as we're talking about it.
Think about it from a biological standpoint. What could possibly, if anything, we should be drinking monkey milk because we're closer related to a monkey. It makes no sense. It's for economic reasons. Cows were, you know, they allowed you to do whatever you needed to do to produce milk. And I have to say, now having seen the strong connection between dairy and cancer, it's crazy that the dairy industry has gotten away with this. And it's crazy that everyone's been brainwashed. If you go into the public school system, you'll see in almost every public school cafeteria a sign advertising milk for the kids. No, there's no biological benefit to us drinking milk. We're the only species that drinks milk after we wean, and let alone drinks milk of another species. It just makes no sense.
It's really interesting because when I was growing up, I know, like when I was going through elementary and junior high and high school, you know, for some reason when they had milk in the cafeteria, I just never liked milk. And in our family, we never were served milk for dinner or for lunch. So maybe that's fortunate. I mean, maybe my mom served us soda. I'm not sure. I can't remember really, but at least no milk. But I'm getting back to the question about the calcium benefits. I mean, so from what I've heard and the research that I've read, is that actually there are no benefits from calcium from milk. As a matter of fact, there are more people in North America now that have osteoporosis and we're drinking more milk than ever. And it's kind of strange. And from what I've heard, and the research that I read is that because when you're consuming animal products, you actually have more of an acid, your body is more acidic. And so the calcium is actually leaching out of your bones to kind of neutralize that acid, which is causing more osteoporosis. So it's kind of a big fallacy, people thinking, well, I'll drink more milk to make my bones stronger, but it really works the opposite way. And we're kind of being scammed.
We are being scammed. Now, that last theory that you mentioned about the acid leaching out of our bones, I think that's actually been disproven. You can find something about that on Dr. Michael Greger's website, nutritionfacts.org. But in any case, it does. If you think about it, where does the cow get the calcium from? From the greens.
Exactly. Exactly.
And right. So why not just, and food is really a package deal. So if you have to drink the milk, you're also getting casein, you're getting the animal fat, and you're getting the animal protein, all of which are very strong disease promoting things. And so why not just go directly to the greens, which is where you do find a lot of calcium.
Totally agree. And what is your favorite substitute for cow's milk? I mean, I know there's almond milk, there's soy, there's cashew. There's what do you like best?
I actually, in my house, make hemp milk most often.
Okay.
Because hemp has the omega-3, some of the omega-3 fatty acids. And it's so easy. You just buy the hemp seeds. And what I do is I mix about 4 cups of water with 3 tablespoons of hemp seeds and blend. And I have a high-speed blender called the Vitamix, and you just blend it up and you've got milk. And then the other thing I do sometimes is I'll make almond milk. you can do that a couple different ways. The more labor intensive way is to take a cup of almonds and soak it overnight and then drain it, rinse it, and then blend that with about 3 to 4 cups of water. And if you want to, you can flavor it with vanilla, cinnamon, dates, whatever. And then you strain it through a mesh bag to get out the pulp. Some people use the pulp in baking or dehydrating it, crackers and cookies and stuff like that. But that's the more labor intensive way. An easier way that my friend Chef AJ shared with me is to take raw almond butter that has nothing in it but almonds and to take a tablespoon of that and blend it with about 3 to 4 cups of water. And you don't have to strain it.
That's great. So you're very high level. You're higher level than I am. I'm still at the stage where I'm getting the little cartons of cashew milk or almond milk or soy milk. But you know, one thing I have noticed though, and I'm trying my best to stay away from this, is that a lot of them have carrageenan in it, which is proven, I believe, not to be very healthy for humans. So yeah, I'm trying to stay away from that.
Can be an irritant for some people who have intestinal disorders. But yeah, I think, you know, when you go to the store and you look at the labels of some of these things, and you know what, Dr. Dave, you said you're not on the same level. This took me a while. I mean, initially I bought all the packaged milk. So
I feel better then.
Fine.
I feel a little better. Because because when you were mentioning also that you're not really eating the, and I'm not sure the pronunciation either, so I'll say Daiya. You're not eating the Daiya cheese anymore. Again, I don't eat a lot of it, but I do like mixing it in with salad sometimes. And ultimately, sometimes you'll probably frown on this making a little vegan grilled cheese sandwich. But it sounds like maybe Daiya cheese and the oils are something I possibly should be staying away from, even as a vegan.
You know, I think it is an evolution for everyone. And I think initially when you transition to veganism, you need to have comfort foods and you can't go right to whole foods necessarily. Some people can. It really depends on your motivation. If you're given a diagnosis of some sort and you know that your health is at risk imminently, then that's a different story. But for many people, and I'm included in this, it was a transition. I used to eat a lot of those fake meats, the soy protein isolate based burgers and wings and all those crazy things that you can find on the market. You can find just about anything in a vegan form now. And I used to eat a lot of those. And then, like I said, I started reading Dr. Joel Fuhrman's Eats Live. And then I read his book, Super Immunity, which for anyone really concerned about cancer prevention, that's my Bible. And it just talks about how you really want to stay away from processed foods as much as you possibly can. It's not just the animal foods that are causing disease. It's also a lot of the processed foods. And many of them have ingredients when you read them that you can't even pronounce. And so you think about, well, what is that doing inside of my body? You know, so, but again, it's an evolution. And initially we did use the fake cheese and we did use the fake meats and we used all of that stuff. And then I realized, first of all, it's cheaper to do it yourself. I don't have to buy these cartons of milk now. The only one exception I do make is I make my own soy yogurt, which sounds really complicated, but I swear it's so easy, it's ridiculous. And I do buy cartons of soy milk, but the only ingredients are soybeans and water.
Well, you're going to have to teach me sometime in the very near future because I'd love to learn how to really step it up. You know, again, I'm mostly whole foods, but sure, occasionally I will eat something that's kind of I guess you'd call it processed or semi-processed from the natural food stores. And it's funny, psychologically, you think when you go to a place like Mom's Organic Market or, you know, some of these really nice natural organic markets, you think you kind of think that almost anything they have in there is healthy, but I know that's not true. And I know we were chatting the other day about the vegan donuts and they've got vegan ice cream out there and things like that. And I totally stay away from all that junk, but sure, like the Daiya cheese, I will put on a little bit. I'm not making my own almond milk yet or soy milk, but I'm ready to crank it up because I really do want to be at the highest level and make sure I'm putting the right things into my body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But you know, again, it's, don't beat yourself up over it. Just do one gradual thing at a time.
Yeah, no question. Now let's talk a little bit about, because I know I shouldn't say specialty, but something you really are passionate about is cancer prevention and eating the right foods. And I know you've mentioned Dr. Joel Fuhrman quite a bit, Eat to Live. So I know there's a connection there with cancer prevention. So talk to me about that. I mean, I think it's obvious how you got into it because of your mom and maybe some other family members. So it's kind of a passion of yours. And of course you want to stay healthy too. So talk to me about cancer prevention and how anybody listening to this can learn and hopefully, you know, prevent anything from happening in their lives as well.
Well, there are some great resources. Again, as I was mentioning, Super Immunity is the best book for this, but there are lots of studies and you'll find these in the research. If you look at nutritionfacts.org, Cruciferous vegetables are extremely preventive against cancer, all forms of cancer, in particular breast cancer. And those include things like kale, broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, Brussels sprouts. So the leafy green vegetables generally, those are extremely protective. And then mushrooms, believe it or not, if you eat one button mushroom a day, it decreases the risk for a woman to get breast cancer. I believe the statistic is 64%, but don't quote me on that. And green tea is also another thing that's very protective. I personally don't do caffeine, so I do decaffeinated green tea. Onions and garlic are extremely preventive against all forms of cancer. So there are certain foods that you can eat that do help you to protect yourself. Now, that's not to say, you know, if you're eating all these foods and you're drinking a lot of alcohol and you're, you know, you have horrible sleep habits, that doesn't eliminate anything, but it certainly is something you can do. It's something you can control. And I was reading a statistic today by Dr. T. Colin Campbell. He was asked how much of cancer is actually genetic, because I thought I was doomed because it's in my genes. Well, my mom was actually tested before she died and did not have the BRCA genes that have been linked to breast cancer. Now, that doesn't mean she doesn't have any genetic mutation that was linked to cancer, but none of the ones that are identified. So I felt a little better about that. But what his statistic was, only 2-3% of all cancers are actually hereditary. And so, you know, I think that there's a cardiologist, I can't remember his name, or maybe some other type of specialist, but he made the comment that it's not disease that's hereditary in families, it's the recipes. So the same recipes get passed down generation after generation, and basically these foods are just disease promoting. So in addition to eating certain foods, there are other behaviors. I mentioned avoiding alcohol, because a lot of people don't realize that drinking even small amounts of alcohol raises the level of circulating estrogen in a woman's body. And of course, increased estrogen is linked to breast cancer. Eating a plant-based diet in general, so a more high-fiber diet, decreases the risk, because the way that excess estrogen is removed from our body is through our digestive tract. So the more fiber we have, the lower our chance of breast cancer. And then in addition to that, exercise, daily exercise has been found to be preventive. So these are all things I've incorporated into my life. Of course, sleep management is also important. And so they did studies that showed that women who work night shift were at higher risk of breast cancer. It has to do with interrupting the melatonin. So you don't want to sleep, for example, with a nightlight on in your room. You want to sleep in a completely dark room. So one of the things I do is I wear an eye mask to block out any light anywhere. So all of these things are just things I've incorporated in my life. And I actually teach cancer prevention seminars with a local physician, Dr. Dana Simpler. And we try to teach people about these things and give them recipes to incorporate these foods as well.
So Sharon, you've talked a lot about prevention of breast cancer, and you've mentioned women a lot. But what about if you're a male, and or you're, you know, women, let's say, face it, women can get other types of cancer. So speak to me about, let's say, a male who's maybe worried about getting prostate cancer somewhere down the road, or colon cancer, or any type of cancer. I'm assuming when you're talking about this whole food plant-based diet and getting proper sleep and not drinking alcohol and getting exercise, it's going to help prevent many different types of cancers.
Absolutely. And as far as men and prostate cancer, the dairy is linked very closely to prostate cancer. So avoiding dairy would be a great thing to do. And also incorporating tomatoes, cooked tomatoes in particular, tomato-based soups and sauces, those sorts of things. Tomato paste is a great thing to add to dishes, for example. But yeah, you're right. These behaviors are linked in general with a lower risk of cancer overall, all types of cancer in general.
Now, I will say, because it's very interesting, what you just mentioned, like, okay, eating whole food, plant-based diet, getting the right amount of sleep, getting exercise, staying away from alcohol, all these things. But I'm thinking, as you're saying these, I'm thinking about the typical North American person. And they're not doing these things. It sounds like most people are doing everything wrong. I mean, let's face it, you walk down a busy street that has a lot of pubs and bars, and you see people in there drinking like crazy, eating fried food, staying up late so you know they're not getting sleep. They're everything wrong. Is that why we've got just so much disease, obesity, high blood pressure, cancer, heart disease, and going on in this country?
It's a mess. It's a mess out there, honestly. In fact, today I had a friend call me up because she found an advertisement for a local cancer benefit. And this is a, you know, countywide fund that they have, and they're doing this benefit. It's a 5K race. And after the race, they're having a barbecue. And barbecued meat, you know, grilled meat is a very strong carcinogen, in particular for colon cancer. So processed meat and grilled meat, extremely closely linked to colon cancer. So it just makes no sense. But yes, I think you're right that we are just so uneducated as a public. We've been fed, pardon the pun, just the wrong information for so long. And the thing is that the good information, the scientifically based information is out there, but it's suppressed. And a lot of, I've talked to a lot of doctors who do know, but they feel like it's too much of a lifestyle change. It's too drastic a change to ask their patients to do. So, you know, a couple of my physician friends have said, well, I tell my patients and they don't want to hear it. So they say, doc, just write me a prescription.
So well, see, yeah, that's a big problem because let's face it. I don't think there's anybody around that's going to deny that tobacco does not cause cancer. I mean, there might be a small percentage that think it's a hoax, but most people, even people that smoke, are going to agree that it causes cancer, but they hope that they're the ones that don't get it. But that it seems like they're, from what I see, God, they're more young people smoking than ever. I mean, you walk down a street, you see these young college age kids and high school age smoking. They know that it causes cancer. So, you know, we're talking about eating healthy, plant-based foods, getting the right exercise. But I guess my question is, do people really care? Are they willing to live their lives and kind of hopefully dodge that bullet and eat the meat and have the cookouts and drink the alcohol and smoke and just hope that maybe it doesn't hit them?
You know what, Dr. Dave, I think there's a lot of emotion tied to food. There's culture tied to food. There's celebration that's tied to food. And when you talk to someone about giving up these foods that they've grown up with, that they've had at every family celebration, or that they've indulged in when they had something good happen, it's tough. It is definitely tough. And sometimes for some people, it does take a crisis, whether it's a family member, a close friend, or even themselves. It takes a crisis for them to think about changing their diet. And I've seen it too many times. What's good is the word is starting to get out more and more. Now, you know, I mean, I think it's more commonly known that things like hot dogs are cancer promoting. You know, people do talk about cutting down red meat. Everyone talks about cutting down red meat. Everyone thinks poultry is good. What they don't realize is it has more cholesterol than the red meat. But, you know, I think people are starting to become aware. I believe that meat consumption is down now. And so I do think there's a growing awareness, but it will take a long time. This is so heavily ingrained in our culture. I was telling someone this the other day, for Mother's Day this year, my family went to Annapolis, Maryland, and there was an ice cream shop. It was a beautiful day. It was warm outside, and we're walking around, and everyone was eating ice cream. Young people, old people, people in wheelchairs, heavy people, everyone was eating ice cream. And I looked at my family. I said, I feel like I'm on another planet. It's just so...
Yep. You know,
everyone.
I would feel exactly the same way. It's just... Well, I look at somebody eating ice cream, I look at somebody eating a steak these days, and I'm thinking to myself, like, why? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this?
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's being a little bit weird, because let's face it, most people do eat meat and milk and poultry, and dairy. Most people do.
Yeah, and I did, and you did. Yeah, we didn't know. Yeah, but once we found out all this powerful information, how, you know, it's almost like you cannot unknow what you know. You can't go back. And once you begin to dip a toe in the water and learn about this, you know, learn about the impact on the environment, the ethical side of it, and of course the health side, and you see all these people getting these, I mean, you're in a similar age group, you're not that much older than me, but how many of your friends can say they're on no medication?
Probably none. You probably, right. when you get to be my age, everybody's on medication except for me. My doctor's very proud of me that I'm not on any meds. Thank God. But it's the lifestyle I choose to live. But you know, it's funny that you mentioned Annapolis, because where I am, I'm fairly close to Annapolis, and I know Annapolis very well. I think I even know exactly which ice cream place you're talking about, and I can picture it, because let's face it, it's a great place. I used to go there, and the ice cream is delicious. I would not touch it these days at all. I wouldn't go near it. But most people are going in there. First of all, they're seeing other people on the street eating the ice cream. It's a hot day. It looks delicious. And they're not thinking at all that not only is this ice cream really, really bad for me, it's going to hurt my body, it's going to cause some type of disease. But they're also not thinking about the suffering of the cows. And I know we haven't gotten into any of that, and we don't have to do that on this show, but they're not thinking about on any level how bad it is for their body and for the planet and for the animals to be eating that milk. They're not thinking.
No, because it's everybody's doing it. It's exactly, just part of our culture. It's just something you do in the summer is you eat ice cream, and nobody stops to think about it.
And God forbid if there's a sign in that store saying that our cows are treated, treated well, and they're all, I can't remember the nomenclature, the language they use, but they infer that, these are free roaming cows and they're treated so nicely. It really is unbelievable. I've learned so much in the short amount of time I've been vegan. I've learned a lot, but I've always, I think I told you before we were chatting, I've always quote unquote thought I was eating a healthy diet. And, now these days I look back and maybe it wasn't so, but it wasn't as healthy as I thought.
No, it was probably healthier than most, but yeah, me too. I mean, I told you I started buying all these organic things, and now that when you go into an organic market, not necessarily everything in there is healthy, because the food industry got a hold of the vegan population too and decided, okay, well, we can do this vegan. And so now you can find vegan cupcakes and vegan cookies and vegan everything. That does not mean it's a health-promoting food. So it really depends on your motivation. I know a lot of ethical vegans who don't think about their health. And what I always say to them is, hey, if you want to encourage people to stop eating animals, shouldn't you be a beautiful, stunning example of what a vegan diet can do? Should you really be overweight and living on junk food and addicted to sugar? You should look great. You should have a lot of energy. Your skin should be glowing. And honestly, that's how I feel. I get told all the time that I look a lot younger than I am. I have more energy now than I've probably ever had in my life. I still can't believe I'm in my 50s. But, I go to these vegan festivals and vegan meetups, and I see these people who are just struggling almost as much as people who aren't vegan. The only difference is they don't eat animals. So,
there's
a lot of work to still be done.
It's interesting that you said that, because a short time after I became vegan, it's really funny that some people that I would meet, whether it's for business or in public somewhere, they hadn't seen me in, I'm not talking about years, I'm talking about maybe weeks, maybe they hadn't seen me in a few weeks. It was very common for somebody to look at me and say, Dave, you look really, something's different. You look really good. What are you doing differently? And I would explain to them how I just have taken animal products totally out of my life. And they look at me like, really, that will do it? I said, well, I don't know. You're the one that told me I look better. I don't know. And it's amazing. Sharon, it's incredible. Like you said, after 2 weeks, and maybe it was a little bit psychological, I don't know, but you said you felt better. And maybe you just, and it's true. I can attest to that. It really is true. And I've got people that are listening to the show. I've got people that are friends with me and follow me on Facebook. And I've touched a lot of people about this vegan thing, about taking animal products out of your life. And I've had many people that became vegans just from what I've been saying and telling them, which I feel great about. And then not only that, but they tell me how good they feel.
Yeah. One of the things I hear from my clients, and again, people who seek out my health coaching services are already interested in making that transition. They've generally seen the movie Forks Over Knives and they're inspired and they want to make the change. So what they first start to tell me is people are complimenting them on their skin. Their skin starts to glow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what people were telling me.
Yeah. I had one client one time say to me, oh my gosh, he started making green smoothies. So this is a guy who was eating out in fast food almost every day at work. And he started making green smoothies, just getting more greens into his diet. And he said, wow, I have so much energy. I just cleaned my whole house. And I said, well, come on over and clean mine. But he had so much energy. He said, why doesn't anyone tell you this? And he's right. Why don't you get a prescription from your doctor that says eat more kale?
Well, I know you touched on that a little bit earlier, because they really don't have the nutrition courses. But here's a question I would be asked a lot. If this is so great and this is so true and this can help, prevent disease and maybe even reverse some disease processes, the question is, why don't all the doctors know about it? If it's really true, why don't they know about it? And why aren't they telling us that? And
well, you know what? Yeah. Kaiser Permanente, one of the largest managed healthcare system in the country, actually just maybe a year ago came out with a paper that they published to inform all of their physicians that a whole food plant-based diet, actually they just call it the plant-based diet, is something that all of the doctors should be recommending, in particular for patients who have things like diabetes, heart disease, et cetera. But in general, they should be recommending it. And to make it easier for physicians to disseminate this information, they recently put together a beautiful brochure, and you can find both of these online. And I always advise my clients to print them out and take them into your physician, because he or she may not be in the know or may not feel that it's worth telling their patients. So if you bring this in, it can help to convince them.
Very interesting. So we're making some progress along those lines. A little bit of progress. Slow but sure. I've got a little bit of a dilemma because, and I know no matter what time of the year it is, there's always some type of holiday coming up. Whether it's over the summer, July 4th, or you get into Thanksgiving or Christmas and all that. There's always something coming up, and I'm asking my parents when they have us over for Thanksgiving. Later this year, is there any way you won't have a turkey? But maybe we can do plant-based. And they, unfortunately, I'm dealing with a lot of family members, and my mom says no, because everybody's expecting a turkey. And you know, it how do you respond to something like that? Everybody's expecting a turkey, so we've got to have turkey. But Dave, don't worry, I'll make you something on the side. But and my mom gets it totally. She used to be vegan, and we won't even go there why she's not vegan anymore. She's trying to get back to that. So she totally gets it. She used to go to these vegan spas, and she was really, really into it for a while. But now Everybody's expecting turkey, so we have to have unfortunately a dead animal on our table while we're celebrating the holidays.
Yeah, I know. I wish I could give you an answer, Dr. Dave. My husband's family has turkey. We go back there for Christmas every year. And I'm at the stage of my life where I walk in and I smell it and it literally turns my stomach. But the thing I've realized is you have to meet people where they are. And especially with family members, you have to be compassionate. And I always just try to take the focus off the food as much as it bothers me. I only ask that they please put the turkey on the other side of the table from where I'm sitting. I try not to look at it and I try not to let it affect me. And I bring my own food for my family. So we always stay in a hotel that has a suite with a little kitchen, and I cook my own food that we bring over. And everyone understands we eat this way. They don't bother us. They don't question us. We always offer our food to everyone else. Sometimes they taste it. Sometimes they don't. When they do, they seem to like it. But, you know, to get through to them, to get them to change, they're just not ready for that message yet.
It's interesting what you said about bringing your own food. I travel a lot for speaking and for work, and it's funny. I always carry food or combination of probably carrying some food with me. Always, I carry some. And then when I get to a destination where I'm going to be, I will seek out Whole Foods or some type of natural market where I stock my hotel room. It almost looks like a restaurant. I've got so much food. I know when I was in Dallas a few weeks ago, I stopped off at the Whole Foods and I spent, whenever you walk into Whole Foods, it costs a lot of money, but I look at that as my health insurance. But my hotel room, when the maid came in to clean up the next morning, she was probably wondering what's going on. This looks more like a restaurant than a hotel room. But I do the same thing. I don't rely on restaurants. No. I don't rely on, if I'm at a meeting, I don't rely on them having the type of food that I can eat. So I'm always carrying my own food. What would you recommend that I bring over to my parents for Thanksgiving that I can eat with Yoko?
You could, if you wanted a main course type of thing, you could make some type of a lentil loaf, for example. That's a popular one. And then pretty much any side dishes. You could probably eat some of the side dishes that your mom's serving, but you could bring over some really good, maybe kale with a cashew cream sauce. I'm trying to think of what
delicious.
I'll make this
sounds
year.
Great.
I always do something pumpkin-based, something sweet potatoes.
Wow.
There are tons of recipes out there. Yeah. And around Thanksgiving, the Forks Over Knives people will put up a recipe guide for each different holiday. So I always go to their website and check that out. And then Chef AJ usually does a little something. So you can always find, there are tons of great vegan blogs available that have amazing recipes on them.
Fantastic. Now, Sharon, I know there are probably some things you want to mention before we close. There's some resources. Maybe you want to talk a little bit more about Chef AJ. So, because I know there were some things you said you wanted to make sure you didn't forget before we ended the show. So I'm going to give you the time right now to just talk about anything you're passionate about, anything you want our listeners to know more about. You've got the open mic right now.
I would just advise them to do their research, to read some of the books I've mentioned. Forks Over Knives has a great cookbook, and they're actually coming out with a new cookbook soon. And then, of course, Chef AJ's book, Unprocessed, fabulous resource. As far as blogs go, the eatunprocessed.com website, Chef AJ does a bunch of videos, and she gives recipes on the videos, and they're fabulous. There's also the Forks Over Knives website, engine2diet.com. One of my favorite blogs is called straightupfood.com, and Kathy Fisher has some amazing, delicious recipes for dessert that have fooled many omnivores for me. So that's a really good one. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is I do conduct these seminars on diet and prevention of cancer in particular, but other diseases with Dr. Dana Simbler. So for any of your listeners who are local, they can find upcoming events on my website, which is eatwell, all one word, eatwell-staywell.com.
Now, of course, we're all over the world, but we do have a lot of listeners local to the Maryland area, of course. So if any of you out there would like to come to, you know, to any of Sharon's events. As a matter of fact, Sharon, I know there's something coming up very, very soon. I don't like to really give dates on the show because people listen to these. Even a year down the road, people will be listening to this show. But I'll say it now. It's okay. And because the show, we'll have this up all the time. But I know, is it every month you do a Forks Over Knives meetup in Columbia, Maryland? Is that correct?
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. One of the things I wanted to advise people who are looking to transition is find support, because it can be tough to be the only person eating this way in your workplace, sometimes in your family. So you can go online and search for meetup groups and find local groups that meet. And I've actually set up a local potluck where I have people come who are new to vegan diets, some people who have been doing it for years, and some of my clients come, some of the students from my classes. It's just a way to give everyone social support and a way to test out new recipes, because everyone comes and brings a plant-based recipe. And so you get to try all these new delicious foods without having to invest the time to prepare them. And then if you like them, everybody can share recipes. So I set up a Facebook page for my group. So look for things like that. And if you don't see one in your community, start one.
And I just want to make sure that anybody listening will have easy access to you. So the absolute best way, because you mentioned a lot of resources, you mentioned a lot of events and things like that. So the easiest way to find you, what would you recommend? Facebook, website, how would you prefer?
I would say my website's probably the easiest way, because you can send me an email through there. But I also have a Facebook page for my business, which is Eat Well, Stay Well, LLC. You can find me there as well.
Fantastic. And I just want to mention that I will definitely be, and Yoko will be too, at your Forks Over Knives meetup. And that's M-E-E-T, not M-E-A-T, your Forks Over Knives meetup. It's September 21st, I believe, if I got that date right. September 21st. And this year is 2014. In case you're listening to this somewhere in the future, it is 2014. But still check Sharon's site out, because she does these every single month. And I know I'm going to love it. I think we're going to have a great time. I'm looking forward to doing so many things with you, Sharon. It's incredible. You've got a lot of great resources, a lot of great connections. It's funny because we were talking earlier, very early in the show, about the acid in the body leaching the calcium out of the bones. And I'll tell you, and thanks for correcting me on that. Now, I've got to tell you something, though. I have read this, and I'm sure you know, I've read this in many very respectable books from authors that are very well known have said that. So I'm glad that you kind of corrected me, because I was also telling other people that. So if I'm wrong, that's fine. But but some of these authors might need to go back and kind of correct things in their books too, because that's kind of the word out there that people are saying. It's interesting.
Well, it's like my friend Dr. Dana Simbler says all the time, science, nutrition is a moving target. So, you know, we learn new information, and sometimes it shifts what we know to be true. So that's one instance where they did some studies and it's not true. However, what you said about the countries where they eat the most dairy is where they have the highest rates of osteoporosis, that does seem to be true.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, listen, we're going to have to wrap it now. I want to thank you so much for your time, Sharon. It's been really enlightening me. Honestly, I've learned a lot during this show, so I know anybody listening to the show has also. I'd be very surprised if people have not learned an incredible amount. So, I hope sometime in the very near future we can get you back. And I think you and I could probably talk all day long about this topic because we're so passionate about it. And I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Dave. And I look forward to meeting you and Yoko at the potluck.
We will be there. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you for listening to Slice Your Age. You are no longer alone on this journey.
Slice Your Age.